They were being cautious, and that's admirable, but they waited too long. And now something else has been produced that can do the job better and has more use cases. And so it's just, it's kind of sad. I'm not saying that Bitcoin will definitely die, but if they can't fix it before this block reward halving, it's going to be in jeopardy.
Hello, welcome to episode 36 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. I have to admit, as cool as Ethereum has always sounded to me, I just haven't kept up with it. Then earlier this month, the market cap of Ether surpassed $1 billion, about a sixth of Bitcoin's market cap. The price has come down a bit since then, but I realized I better get caught up on Ethereum now that it's the second biggest cryptocurrency. And who better to help me than Ethereum's golden-voiced podcaster, Arthur Falls.
Hey, Rob!
Hey, Arthur, how are you?
Great, how about yourself?
Man, I don't think I can match your energy level.
Yeah.
I've always thought you were just a New Zealander, but to set up this interview, we found out you're in New York. Is this a trip, or what are you doing?
Well, actually, usually, Rob, I live in Maine, but I've been in New Zealand kind of periodically. I was when I started doing Beyond Bitcoin. And so that's why, you know, that's where I was way back then. But most of the time I've been living in Maine.
Yeah, I guess I just caught you when you were in New Zealand. I just figured up yeah. That's where you are all the time.
My mother's American. And so I actually moved here quite a few years ago to Maine, and I was working in the lobster fishery there.
What got you into cryptocurrency stuff?
Well, it's quite funny because right after my last year of lobster fishing, like way back when, 2013, I had assumed it would be my last year. I went to Melbourne in Australia, and there just wasn't a lot of work going on there. And I spent like the whole year on the couch just learning about Bitcoin. And then I came to the end of the year and it's like, well, I spent all my savings. I've really kind of achieved nothing this year. Something must come out of this. And so I made Beyond Bitcoin.
And had you had any podcasting or audio editing or any experience like that before?
Absolutely none, no.
Wow. Well, how did you come out of the gate with such a professional-sounding podcast?
I bet if you went back, and please don't do this, and listen to those earlier episodes, some of them are really bad. I actually went back and tidied a bunch of them up after the fact. And I had done like, I had made maybe 5 episodes.
So that seemed like someone I would have thought who was, you know, really knew everything about Bitcoin and was really looking at the 2.0 or metal layers or whatever. I mean, were you feeling like you were at that stage? You were kind of beyond Bitcoin and
absolutely. I remember because 2014, right at the start of 2014 or toward the end of 2013, something changed because you had this influx of new people to the space. That was like a mirror in which you could look at yourself and your own attitudes or see yourself, or, you know, I saw myself a year or so earlier. I had an opportunity to re-examine a lot of the assumptions that I'd made back then that now I didn't necessarily, you know, hold myself to anymore, and hadn't had the opportunity to re-examine them. And so I really lost interest in Bitcoin. I became quite disenchanted because it seemed quite static, quite stale, very much the first version, kind of a proof of concept. And I was convinced that something else must be waiting to emerge. And so that was basically Beyond Bitcoin, was the search for what would emerge, be it a new cryptocurrency or a new paradigm, a new finance paradigm. So actually my last episode was based on a paper by Meher Roy called An Architecture for the Internet of Money. And really that was, for me, that paper, and it's out there, it's really easy to find, An Architecture for the Internet of Money. To me, that lay out what we will see happening in one way or another in the future globally. I think he hit the nail on the head.
So I hadn't realized you actually were kind of over Bitcoin when you were doing Beyond Bitcoin. You really were beyond Bitcoin. That's funny to actually get to know that.
Well, it's not that I was over Bitcoin. I mean, it's still incredible. I mean, it's an unspeakable work of genius. It's just, there's no way to describe how powerful it is to kind of read the white paper and look at the network and what's been built. It's incredible, you know. But as for the future that Bitcoin has, I think the real world changing technologies are going to kind of be built using what we've learned from Bitcoin rather than using Bitcoin itself.
You had so many different interesting guests. How are you keeping up on just all the different technologies?
Just reading. Also, I'd done tons of back reading. You know, I'd done a whole year of like obsessive research. And so I could recognize quite quickly whether or not something was good or not so hot, you know, if something was worth delving into. And then I'd just tear through through Reddit and see anything new. I'd just write it down, do a quick research on it, and if it looked good, I'd follow it up. Otherwise, I'd just I'd ignore it. And then I'd just follow leads and get introductions from people I'd interviewed and just let it grind on and make sure that I did, say, an hour or so of research before I covered any kind of anything that I wasn't fully clued up on.
I was curious if, are there any interviews you had in Beyond Bitcoin that stand out both as, hey, that was amazing, or, hey, that actually ended up being a crock or something?
Some brilliant ones were obviously that one, the last one. I was always a fan of Tim Swanson. He's really, I've always liked him as a commentator. And Dominic Williams. Dominic Williams is the man. He is one of the most quick thinking, super sharp people in the space. He's never really finished anything, which I think is more a, that I can think of. Like, you know, he's had a bunch of projects, but I think so many projects in this space become obsolete before they reach completion that dropping projects it's one of the most intelligent things to do. Well, you know, in a lot of situations, because it's like, you know, what if it's irrelevant now, or what if it's been superseded, or, you know, what if there's some like massive, awesome opportunity that's emerged that you're missing out on because you're slaving away over an obsolete project, you know? Funnily enough, all the people who I just mentioned, Meher Roy, Tim Swanson, and Dominic Williams, all feature in that last episode. And for me, that last episode, even though it's such a Frankenstein, I just cut together every bit of content that I had, which just happened to be some Dominic Williams in there as well. That, for me, shaped the future of the crypto finance and the smart contract computing paradigm. That was framed in that last episode, in a way, episode 27, in a way that really stuck with me and resonated with me. And I felt like I'd completed the story, or I'd found some resolution to the questions that I'd started with when I started that podcast, which was, what is actually the future going to look like? How is this going to change the world? And in concrete terms, I haven't actually mentioned this, Rob, but I work for Consensus now. They're like the big Ethereum company. It's a collection of projects that have all kind of gathered together under the Consensus brand to kind of operate in a synergistic fashion. And so myself and a bunch of the talented folks over there have been building this website, and it's just gone live today, funnily enough. There's a new podcast there, State Change. That's one I'm doing. I've got about a month of episodes in the bank, so that's going to be coming out twice a week.
Are you a developer at all or no?
No. They've got great people to do this kind of stuff. There's no way I could have put this together.
And I have just no idea when I see a project like this, like how big it is. Is this a good paying full-time job for you? I mean, I have no clue.
Yeah, it's good. It's not what I was earning in the fisheries and tree work, because I had a business and a job, and, you know, both of them pretty lucrative. So that was I felt like last year I was building myself up to live in Maine. I was setting myself up for life. So, and then this came along, but there's so much opportunity here. There's so much opportunity to give yourself credibility and position yourself in this emerging technological space. It's not about the money, but the money's great as well. I mean, don't get me wrong. The money is fantastic.
Support the show by buying a Bitcoin keychain at bkeychain.com. This is the classic Bitcoin keychain you've seen all over the internet. It's a substantial coin-like medallion that you'll be proud to keep with you at all times. For those who love a pun in times of division, check out the Bitcoin Fork Pen at bitcoinforks.com. Bitcoin Fork Pens are sure to get a laugh at the next Bitcoin meetup or conference. Again, that's bkeychain.com and bitcoinforks.com. I have not at all kept up with Ethereum. I'm just a Bitcoiner who, you know, knows, I guess, some of the major things. But just the other day, I decided to look up the price of Ether, because I had actually purchased some in the pre-sale, and I had no clue it was up close to 100 times in terms of U.S. dollars.
Oops, it was more like 40 times.
And I was just in shock. You know, a lot of people seem to think the Ether market is ridiculous, pump and dump. People say a lot of stuff.
So that kind of background suddenly made me feel some sense of urgency to cash out at least some of that ether that suddenly, you know, this value that I was just shocked was there. So I looked around. I found a GUI Ether wallet on the Ethereum site. I downloaded it. I imported my JSON file that I got in the presale, and I entered my password, and then I saw a wrong password. And I tried it a couple of times, and I started freaking out. It's just such a weird feeling, you know, like easy come and then easy go. And I was like, oh my gosh.
You got to find that password, man.
It turned out I did some more Googling, and I saw some people say, like, when they had certain special characters in the password, like parentheses, that they had an issue. But then I started seeing other people just had problems with this particular wallet. So I tried another solution, and it was just a bug with the wallet. So I was able to access the Ether.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. It's all beta, you know? It's all, everything's beta right now.
Well, that's what's so weird. When everything's beta and you can't really trust technology yet, here I had this value that I was feeling nervous about and wanted to cash out. But like, how do I do that? It's just such a...
You didn't sell it all, did you?
No, but I just felt like, especially at the time, I wanted to grab some of that value. So I've sold about half of it.
I'd leave it at that. Rob?
Well, I know your perspective for sure. I mean, I would never sell all of it, but in crypto or anything, I've never had much success. You know, Bitcoin's done okay. I didn't get in early enough to have gotten 100-time gains, though. It just brought up so many weird feelings, you know, just the weird combination of like speculation and or investing, you know, and gambling. Gambling, yeah. Let's just say gambling.
And it makes you feel almost guilty that you've like, oh man, I didn't work for this. You know, do you ever get that?
Yes. I felt immense guilt. Someone was like, yeah, go cry into a bottle of
bottle of 18-year-old scotch. Yeah.
It is so unfair. And I realized, gosh, how many people, you know, either through pump and dumps, it's even worse than just dumb luck like me. But
that's the game, man.
Yeah, I don't like, I mean, it seems like such an unproductive game. I mean, I guess there's something to the markets being efficient, but I don't know.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you.
Let's just really start at the beginning.
What is Ethereum, right? From the bottom, what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is this like cool way for lots of people to run a ledger and come to agreement about what it should be and be convinced about that agreement. It's super secure. It's awesome, right? So how do we generalize this so we can take all the benefits that Bitcoin gives a currency and give it to other things? And so people have like chosen other things and built these consensus mechanisms to enable other functions or additional functionality, but on different blockchains. What Ethereum does is it says, okay, how can we take the blockchain itself and develop that as well as possible and give other people the ability to use the power of our blockchain as opposed to making it a special purpose platform. BitShares had a similar idea way back in the day, but the idea of the Ethereum Foundation is only focused on the technology and making that usable to everyone. So like, how do they make Bitcoin that can do everything? It all comes down to this concept of the smart contract and combining that with the blockchain. And the way they did it was to describe what Ethereum looks like, think of a spreadsheet and imagine that each cell in a spreadsheet is an address. And in that cell is a formula. And that formula is what you could think of as a smart contract. And if you can make that formula arbitrarily complex, you know, imagine like having a spreadsheet in front of you and having massive, massive programs in each cell. Because you can do that. You can type away forever. And that is basically what Ethereum is. And so what you can do is when you send Ether or any other cryptographic token to one of these, you know, one of these cells in the spreadsheets, one of these addresses on the Ethereum network, whatever logic behind that cell exists will process that payment and do whatever you need it to do.
Can you give me an example?
Yes, I can, Rob. I want to build a blog and I want everyone who contributes to the blog to receive a stake in that blog. And then every time someone pays for advertising, I want that advertising money to be split up and distributed among the people who have a stake proportionally to the people who have contributed to the blog. And with Ethereum, what I'll do is I'll issue a currency and that will it will have an unlimited cap. So it can be issued, an unlimited amount of it can be issued. And what I'll do is every time someone, and this is a while off, I'm not going to just launch up, I'm not doing this tomorrow, but I'm going to distribute that currency in return for contributions. And then every time someone makes a payment for advertising on the site, it's going to be made to an address that has a smart contract behind it. And that smart contract is going to split that payment up and divide it among all of the holders of this particular contribution token proportionately to the total share of tokens that they hold. And that is something that can be done extremely easily using Ethereum. And that's like the whole dApp thing, you know?
And are the tokens on the Ethereum platform too?
Yeah, they are. Everything is. And it's easy, like real easy and cheap to make your own tokens, actually. You can do it yourself. Kind of like Counterparty. There's a good tutorial on the Ethereum Foundation's official blog. Although that blog is usually super, super tech, but yeah.
I mean, that sounds, not being a developer, but that sounds doable, say, with Counterparty and Bitcoin.
Absolutely, it's doable with those things. But it's not nearly as easily done.
And so the smart contract, is that part of a blockchain that lives everywhere?
Well, the smart contract is behind those addresses. So think of the data behind your Bitcoin address is pretty much just a series of balances. There's a bunch of stuff contained in Bitcoin transactions, but I don't think you are. There's also the op return function that was a big controversy around the time of Counterparty because it was a way that you could store additional information on the blockchain. But no, you can't store additional information on the Bitcoin blockchain, at least not an appreciable amount. Whereas the Ethereum blockchain is all about storing these programs. And so behind them, you have a balance. A contract must have a balance because it has to be able to pay for its own execution. And it does that by buying gas, but it does that automatically. So behind every Ethereum address is a smart contract. And what a smart contract is, that's kind of a bit of an arcane term. It's better to think of it as a very small computer program. And there's one of these behind absolutely every Ethereum address. And what that does is it describes what will happen when funds are sent to that address. Or maybe it will say what will happen when the clock strikes 12 and there's funds behind there. Maybe it'll send those funds to someone else. And maybe it says if these two private keys are presented, then release the funds. All these different functionalities are built into the Ethereum protocol using this extremely flexible programmability that exists behind each address. So every time anyone uses the Ethereum network, they're interfacing with these smart contracts, but they're not even knowing it because they're just executing predefined actions that were laid out when the contract was written.
Tell me how mining and consensus works versus Bitcoin.
Right now, they just have a graphics card miner, and they said that if anyone developed an ASIC, they'd just change it.
Well, how are mining rewards distributed?
All of the takings, they dilute 26% annually to the miners. And that will continue until proof of stake rolls around with Casper.
But I mean, is there such a thing as like pools, or how does it work as far as effort you put in and when you get rewarded, how you get rewarded?
Well, now it takes a long time to find a block. So yeah, everyone's definitely in pools. In fact, if you have a look, the hash rate has skyrocketed with the price.
How is it compared to Bitcoin?
Nothing like Bitcoin.
All right.
It's secure. It's weird. It's not like anyone has ever been attacked, you know? So it seems kind of more symbolic than anything. Obviously, you need to have a secure network. But this is just to carry it over until we get to Serenity, when the proof of stake protocol, Casper, goes into effect. When that happens, a bonded validator system will be initiated, where what you do is you take your coins and you tie them up for a minimum period of, say, 4 months. You get paid 26% of those bonded coins annually for bonding them and using them, using your computer as a validator node.
Interesting. So if you believe in Ether, you're also getting some pretty good interest on top of your Ether.
Yeah, you are. That's the whole idea. And the other cool thing about that is that will have a positive effect on the price as well, because it takes a large amount of Ether out of circulation.
So does the amount of Ether you have on your computer when you're running the mining app correspond to how much, say, you have in consensus of the state?
Absolutely, yes. It's proof of stake. So the larger stake makes the call. But yeah, I mean, it's designed incredibly elaborately to make sure that everyone just agrees. You know, consensus algorithms are so advanced now. It's so hard to kind of pull them apart and provide an intelligent description of what's going on inside them. There's just such elaborate game theory. It used to be easy. Like, you know, 2014, it was simple. I remember delegated proof of stake. That was like, oh, I get that. That's simple, you know. But now it's just gotten so elaborate.
Do you even have any clue about different attacks that people theorize might be possible once it switches?
Only if you can get a huge amount of ether. But there's so much that can go wrong in an attempt to attack a proof of stake system. And you know you're going to lose all your money. No matter what happens, the attacker loses all their money.
I can't even imagine what the attack is, let alone know why they'd lose their money. Can you spell out a scenario?
If you've attacked a proof of stake system, you invalidate all of the legitimate coins that were on there. And as soon as it happens, all these legitimate parties say, what? All my coins disappeared. And everyone's like, well, I'm not investing in that. And so, and I'm not going to use that for anything. Like, this is a joke. And so everyone just leaves, and the value of the native token on that network goes to zero.
I guess I'm thinking maybe down the road, as there's a lot more value tied up with smart contracts somehow, that just like they used to say, well, if say counterparties representing a lot of value in stocks, then that value is stronger than the security.
Yes, yeah. That is a really good question, Rob. Yeah, no, it doesn't work, right? Because you may have a lot of money on there. You may have a lot of funds on there, but you've still got to buy the tokens, right? You know, you still have to buy up all of that ether and assume all of that, like that risk. You know, how would you go about acquiring 51%? Or it would probably take more than that of the network in order to perform that attack. The other thing is there are really elaborate methods for detecting dishonest behavior of nodes. If you do that, if a node gets caught out behaving in a dishonest fashion, it instantly forfeits its stake. And the person who discovered it, the node that discovered that cheating node, that node gets a reward. And so it's pretty hard to pull that off. You'd have to do a perfect job, you know? I mean, there have to be attack vectors. There always are, but often they just are so expensive. And at the end of the day, that's the name of the game. It's not plugging the holes. It's just making them so expensive to exploit that it's not feasible, you know?
If you're mining right now, can any Joe mine and it's worth the electricity, or do you have any sense of that?
Some of the guys at the office have turned their miners on again. I don't think they're getting many coins, but they're getting something, you know? I'm sure it's worth it, you know? Definitely. Definitely. It's always worth turning on a miner. No, it doesn't mean you're not going to make a ton of money. But
well,
it's always
I guess there's just the question, would it be better to just buy some ether than the electric bill, I guess?
Definitely better to buy the ether, yeah. But like it usually is, it's usually better to buy the ether because you get it now rather than over the course of however long, you know?
What's the current size of the blockchain and how is that expected to grow?
It's not big. It's going to grow huge, though. It's going to be immense. Trillions of gigabytes. Yeah, it's going to be big, though. There's a lot of problems to solve.
I mean, is there any idea like where it'll be in a year or two? I mean, even just a guess?
No, I mean, I wouldn't hazard a guess also because it's not particularly relevant because this is not something for your average person is not supposed to be downloading the blockchain. It's only specific people who hold us who are either mining or in the ultimate case of proof of stake, bonding their coins. And you're bonding their ether to secure the network. And that's a while off. You're going to have specific hardware for this kind of stuff. It's not something that the average person has to worry about. And it's going to get so big that even that specialized hardware is not going to be able to store the whole blockchain. It's going to have to be split up into much smaller pieces in the future.
Today's magic word is mouse. M-O-U-S-E. Enter the magic word to claim your share of this week's LTB Coin listener reward on letstalkbitcoin.com. And make sure you listen to the very end of this episode to find out why mouse is the magic word.
Bitcoin has no claim to security anymore at all. They've been having like majority mining pools for a really long time. And while those pools are incentivized to not manipulate the network, the whole original idea was that no one could, whereas now they can. They just don't want to because that would crash the price of Bitcoin. But you know what they could do is they can censor the network and they can censor transactions that might take place on Counterparty regarding their things. I mean, Bitcoin's not really working anymore. It doesn't really work anymore. Its value proposition, I mean, I think they'll fix it. I think they'll fix it. I think right now Bitcoin is broken as, like, fully broken, because they can censor the network. They can do that, those Chinese miners. This was happening back in 2013, and that was part of the reason I became disinterested in Bitcoin, was because it was quite clear that it was going to take some massive changes to the core protocol to make it work, and those have not happened. It's shocking. And I think they will happen. I think that if they don't happen before the block reward halving, Bitcoin will die basically for real this time.
Let me get back to some really basic questions. What is the connection between the value of Ether and the Ethereum project? When I own Ether, what do I own? What does that have to do with Ethereum?
You own two things. One is the only way to pay for contract execution on the Ethereum virtual machine. And that's the only way to pay for it currently. That will change in the future. So the idea is if you want to execute code on the Ethereum blockchain, which might perform a bunch of different functions, you need that smart contract to be loaded with enough Ether to pay for its own execution. And the other thing is it's the only token that can be bonded to secure the network and receive the 26% interest once proof of stake goes live with the Serenity release of Ethereum. So those are the two things that the Ether token does. Also, it's a tier one cryptocurrency as well.
Now, I guess the question is, you know, with the current price, how much is speculation versus how much is, you know, people really thinking this is the value necessary?
Like, it's 100% speculation. I mean, it's all 100% speculation. I mean, what's Bitcoin even for, you know?
The cost to execute the Ethereum contract, how is that affected by the value of the Ether token?
That's semi-fixed, right? That's what a miner insists on receiving in order to execute that contract. But then, of course, you also have the seigniorage, the block reward, in the same way that Bitcoin does. So so right now, it's not really, there's not a market for paying for the execution of transactions.
So it'll be a free market to
figure out. It will, yeah. It's the same as a transaction cost. And gas is mixed in with that mechanism. But again, that's like that chestnut.
So again, I get to hear a lot of people's arguments against Ethereum. It seems like the people I talk to or listen to. A lot of people complain about a pre-mine. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there was a pre-mine, but it wasn't a big one. So I don't think there was anything inappropriate there.
What,
you know?
What were the specifics of the pre-mine?
I think it was 10 or 15%. But the whole thing was pre-mine. So what happened was they accepted tokens, and it was, what did you get? You got, you know, there was a diminishing return as far as your investment throughout the crowd sale. And at the end of that, 10 or 15% of what had been raised, basically tokens were issued in return for the Bitcoin that was contributed. And then 10 or 15% of those tokens were minted in addition and given to certain members of the development team, which seems perfectly reasonable, right? It wasn't even that much. I mean, you know, it's the equivalent of, you know, they sold a 85% share in the project, which is perfectly reasonable to me. And then when they initiated the network, 26% of new coins get generated every year, of that original amount, get generated every year and distributed among the miners. Or it might be 26% of the total in existence. That's probably what it is.
And there's no cap on the total Ether that will ever be created? It's a different kind of a thing than Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think 26% forever. I think it's going to be issued at a rate of 26% just for till the end of time, every year till the end of time. But that might not be the case. They could just stop that. I think maybe they haven't fully made a commitment with regard to how they're going to manage that. But the idea is that there may be a reason to do that, or there may be a reason to stop doing that. It's very, you know, it's not 100% clear. If you wanted a stable economic unit, you could build that on top of the Ethereum network. But the the Ether token, whatever they do with that, it will be based around maintaining the health of the network, not the value of the token.
So it's interesting because it sounds a little different. I guess Bitcoin, you could say, well, it's great because everybody knows, you know, all the details. But I guess then making changes is so hard. But sounds like Ethereum, some of the, you can't really plan out economically into the future because you don't really know what the plan is. Is that fair?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the problem that Bitcoin's run into, you know. Satoshi didn't plan out into the future. He said, hey, I don't know about this. I haven't figured out this block size thing. I'm just going to make it a megabyte and then figure it out later. And suddenly this has had tremendous economic, this is driving Bitcoin toward an economic precipice as we speak. And so you have to be prepared to change things. And I think that's one of the reasons why this option has been left open by the original developers.
I've heard people say that Ethereum really hasn't found a specific problem that it's just great at fixing, and it's, you know, it's kind of like what real problem needs Ethereum.
That's the whole point. Ethereum is absolutely everything that we ever figured out with cryptocurrency. Ethereum can do it. So if there's a problem that can be fixed by cryptocurrency, it can be fixed by Ethereum. And that's the it's the smart contract thing, right? It's the flexibility of it. That's what makes it work. That's what makes it do cool stuff.
There's a lot of Bitcoiners who really seem kind of either down on Ethereum as a technology or down at least on this price as just being a pump and dump scheme. I mean, do you have anything to say about that?
Ethereum is going to be the backbone for the global financial system. I'm going to go out right now with a prediction and say that. I'm not saying the Ethereum public blockchain will, but I think it will. And that's what a lot of people think Bitcoin was going to be, but it's obviously not. Like, look at these developers. It's a mess, you know? It's just they could have done something great, but they didn't. And it's kind of, I think Bitcoin will survive, but it will survive alongside Ethereum. Ethereum is kind of Satoshi's dream writ large. It's you know, Bitcoin could have been, but they just didn't develop it, you know. And I mean, I don't want to come down too hard on Bitcoin. I know it sounds like I am, but Bitcoin was supposed to be developed. You know, it wasn't supposed to stay the same. It was supposed to change with the times. And you know, all this money should have been poured into developing it. Instead, just people, I don't know what people did with it.
I feel like the argument has been that, hey, this is such a balancing act right now. We want to go super slow and not be too quick with a change that could have dire consequences. And I guess that's one of the critiques perhaps about Ethereum, is that it's so complex. Maybe we're not ready to have Turing complete.
There are some things that could go really wrong. There are some, like, not with the system. They just hard forked the other day and went off without a hitch. Like, there are tons of things that could go wrong in the way that Ethereum is used. So part of the thing about using Ethereum is we is basically conducting research, so we know what we're doing before we just start messing around developing new ultra low latency international financial networks. You know, we have to be really careful with this technology. I mean, Bitcoin's amazing, right? It's amazing. It's an incredible work, but it just wasn't sufficiently developed. And time's run out. I mean, that's the honest truth, Rob. Time just ran out on Bitcoin. They were being cautious, and that's admirable, but they waited too long. And now something else has been produced that can do the job better and has more use cases. And so it's kind of sad. I'm not saying that Bitcoin will definitely die, but if they can't fix it before this block reward halving, it's going to be in jeopardy.
All right, I'm selling my Bitcoin.
No, don't do that. I hold Bitcoin, man.
This is supposed to be about Ethereum. You weren't supposed to just make me depressed about Bitcoin.
Well, it's just part of the reason is, I mean, people are living in the past, you know? People are really living in the past, and this is such a fast-moving space. It's hard to understand the mindset of some of these people who are so obsessed who get down on Ethereum and obsess over Bitcoin, you know? It's such, you know, the space has changed, and to associate it with a single brand is to miss the point of the whole thing.
Well, it's much easier to really pay attention to just one cryptocurrency.
It is. It's funny. That's that thing. It's a brand, you know. People like got into this brand of Bitcoin, and they really imprinted on it. And it's because it's easy to do that. But look, I mean, this is not a brand. It's a technological movement.
Okay. Do you have social accounts or website you want to plug before we say goodbye?
Yeah, definitely. Check out, actually just check out at Ether Review on Twitter, and you can follow me at Arthur Falls. Also, I think pretty soon, maybe even by the time this comes out, I'll have the Ether Review blog at etherreview.info. So check out etherreview.info for, and maybe there'll be a website there for you with a bunch of episodes of the Ether Review. And check out media.consensus.net. That's media.consensus, CONSENSYS.net. I'm fairly convinced it's the best Ethereum media site around. It's got the Ether Review on there as well.
So what do you think? Is Ethereum the future of cryptocurrency? Is Bitcoin on the verge of collapse? Please come by this episode's show notes page and weigh in. You'll also find a list of links to topics we discussed. Just go to thebitcoingame.com and look for episode 36. I'm the BTC Game on Twitter, or send email to rob@thebitcoingame.com. See you next time.
You know, what is, not just speculatively, or I mean, obviously speculatively. Oh no, I just got a mouse.
Oh, is that noise?
That was a mouse, 1 second. Buddy, sorry, buddy.
What was that? Oh my God.
I always feel so guilty about mouse traps, but I don't want mice in my house. They stink.
Did I just hear you put a mouse out of his misery?
Yeah, that was awful.
I've never had that happen on a podcast before.
No, I mean, you haven't. This is like neither have I.